Sagittarius, Sun, Moon, Rising, and Chiron. Welcome to your mid-year reading, now autumn reading for 2025, somehow mistakenly called Easy Does It. This has not been an easy set of readings to do. One of the most challenging in recent memory. I'm not quite sure why that is, except for the sheer volume of the astrology, which means more than dots on the page. It's really about how much karma there is to process in doing a reading like this. There's a lot of movement, and they take a lot of preparation and thought. And anyway, here we are. That all said, we are in this very unusual time of existence and experience, and most people are not giving a name to that. And the name could be something like overwhelming, or it could be something like challenging, but very much in a spirit that has pretty much followed us through the entire 21st century, now 25 years old. Everything all at once. We are getting everything all at once. And we will in November be getting a little more of everything all at once when the clock ticks out on the Trump administration. But that's a totally different issue. Just this year, we've had all four gas giant planets change signs. Previous 2 years, Pluto was in the process of changing signs. Sedna, an ultra-slow mover, change signs. And in 2025, we had Jupiter change signs, followed by Saturn and Neptune and Uranus, all either in the process or having completed sign changes. Jupiter, your ruling planet, is going to be in Cancer, and it'll be retrograde. It'll all be in the sign Cancer. I'll go over that with you. But to have all of these planets that together make up 99% of the mass of the solar system simultaneously change signs is a very big deal. And you say, how is it a big deal? Well, look at what's going on. And I realize there are kind of two people in my audience: those who are obsessed with following the news, and those who really don't follow the news, and maybe they read my columns or articles and listen to Planet Waves FM. But besides that, they don't listen, and even some of you don't even read the articles because it's too much. So we have the like people who are it's kind of sympathetic and parasympathetic. We have the ones who are you know lit following all these changes in society and this onslaught of this thing falsely being called artificial intelligence. And then there are those who are just like, I can't do any more of this. And I would like to be able to not have to pay so close of attention to all that is going on, but my work requires it. And more than that, I am involved in how this influences us personally, which is what I'm here to talk about today. We have some meek sense of the impact on the world itself. The fastest ever technological expansion in the history of humanity. This is completely already taken over the economy and the entire economies of many small nations, and most people don't know this. They think that it's a chat program. And why is my son or daughter think that this thing is their girlfriend? This is very deep personal influence. So let's look at the Sagittarius chart, first beginning with the solar chart itself. And this is my first foray into doing this, and I'm planning to doing more of it, but I want to get you acquainted with the blank wheel, because the blank wheel is where it all begins, and it is the structure that is underlying everything. And in a world where everything changes so fast, there's no even keeping up with it. There's no processing anything spiritually or emotionally, and things just seem to come at us faster and faster. This structure has remained the same since, you know, 2,000 years before the printing press. Printing press is approximately like 1470-ish, late 15th century. And this has been underlying everything since approximately 400 BC. This is a Greek tool. If you're a musician or you've ever studied music, you notice the resemblance to the circle of fifths or circle of fourths. And it's your basic Greek thought, and it provides a map to consciousness that we are going to follow for the next hour or so. So when we're reading for Sag, Sag Sun, Sag Rising, anything strong Sag signature, I include Chiron in this. You set Sagittarius to the eastern horizon, and that in astrology is to the left, and south is up, north is down, everything is reversed. So it's not exactly a map, but it works well when you see a planet there and you know where to look in the sky, you will see that planet be there. So it is a material representation. And what the important thing to know about Sagittarius is that there are two deep space points in your chart, in Sagittarius, that define the sign Sagittarius. And even long before these deep space points were known, the galactic center, approximately 1930, the great attractor, approximately 1985, 86 or so, recent, right, 20th century science. This wheel goes back to 400 BC, right? This goes back to the days of Pythagoras, right? These points have been here. They have been here, and they have in many ways, you know, defined the concept of what Sagittarius is long before they were known. And I think this is one of the most interesting things about astrology. Sagittarius, known for all things exotic, all things different, all things foreign and spiritual. And so when we have the center of our galaxy located right in Sagittarius, and I don't have a way to show you that right now, I can't switch, I can't share my screen, but we've all seen that barred spiral galaxy. Well, that is right here. And then a gravitational focal point of the nearest 100,000 galaxies is this thing called the Great Attractor, all of these in your sign. And so what they create is a tremendous sense of magnitude, a sense of presence, a sense of purpose, a sense of being that may be very difficult to translate into words, and it may just translate as belief in something about yourself. Without practical guidance, which I'm going to describe where the practical guidance comes from, that belief can be overblown, and it can also be misdirected, misapplied, because there's not really the grounding to bring in all of that energy, all that is so, you know, potent. I mean, just to give you an example, there are 300 million stars in approximately, no one's actually counted, this is statistical, 300 million stars in our galaxy, and the center of the core of the galaxy and its black hole are right there. Normally we have, you know, one star. That's a big deal. Like, for example, Regulus is up here. That's a star in our galaxy. This is considered very important to have one star, one, in somewhere. And for you, significant. But here, right in your sign, there are basically countless billions of stars. So that, and the black hole at the center of that, nobody really knows how the galaxy is held together. They make up theories like dark matter. You would also have all of that dark matter holding that spiral together. And then the Great Attractor, this thing is, I interviewed the guy who led the discovery team, Brent Tully, Pisces, of course, who described it as kind of a drainage basin for the nearest 100,000 galaxies. So how would that make you feel? Well, it could make you feel very important, very significant, like your presence matters a lot on this planet. And at the same time, it is very difficult to scale that into something that is practical, that is workable, that is doable. And one of the most important things about, well, when we talk about Sag, there's two, I think, things that stand out. One is the placement of the fire signs. The fifth house is your creative zone. It's kind of a big art studio right in the middle of the chart. And this is your point of self-actualization. Aries is always the place where you would aspire to find yourself. And that's going to be through immersion and indulgence in the most daring creative activities. Not all Sagittarians do this. Not all Sagittarians who consider themselves artists do this. Not everyone has the ability to tap their creative source or to manage the throughput of their creative source. And for many, it is a frightening thing. It is disturbing. It is filled with all mixture of light and dark that is not easy to handle. And in most people, it is, held down. But that's not very easy for you right now. We'll get into that in a moment when I put the planets into the chart. I promise I've got a chart with a couple of, I've got the planets. Right now we're going to look at the houses. So then we've got Leo on fire sign in house 9, Leo fire sign house 9. And this is a very bold faith in yourself. It is a faith in yourself so bold, it could take up a place as the center of existence, and place you at the center of existence, sometimes either to the exclusion of others or having the sense that others must in some way wrap themselves around you, revolve around you, must be somehow that they are in a sense integral to everything that you do. And this could be true. And so we have this solar force in the ninth house, and we have this galactic force in the first, and then this self-actualizing vortex in the fifth. So if you ever thought there was a little special mojo about Sagittarius, that's it. And what sets the whole tone for this is the fact that you're born with your sun or your ascendant or some other important point close to the great attractor or the galactic center. Okay, so I'm going to pause this for a second. Okay, so that gives you, just continuing, this gives you an idea of where you stand, bringing in all this fiery energy through these creative, spiritual, and self-expressive places. It really can force high focus on a kind of a self-centeredness that itself can be alienating, and that you need to know about. You need to know about this. And people can love Sagittarius for this or not love Sagittarius for this, but what's crucial to know is the sense of the possible misproportion. When we're talking about galactic points in your first house, for the other fire signs, the fire signs appear in the same configuration. There would be a fire sign in 9 and 5 and 1, but that's going to move the great attractor to one of these two places where it's a little bit more manageable. Now, what then happens is that in order to get anything done, you have to work through an earth sign. Earth is the element of the earth. We're talking about manifestation of wealth. We're talking about practical work, talking about effort. You have to go through an earth sign. And here's where Sagittarius is kind of put through a step-down transformer, where the wire, the big cable, that you drive underneath, or along the highway, is running at like 11,000, 12,000 volts, but the appliances, the appliances in your house are at most running at 110, 120. So the step-down is into the earth signs. And here's where it can get tricky, and we're going to look at that when we change charts. So that's most of the tension that I'm describing. The tension that I'm describing is in the form of this incredible amount of fire. I mean, incredible is an overused word, but it's not really credible to comprehend the Great Attractor and the Galactic Center. It's just not, they're beyond the realm of ordinary comprehension. There's just no grasping them. And yet you've got them right in your chart, right up front. All right, let's add some planets. So this is the current status of your solar chart. What's so interesting is the solar chart will work without planets. You do not need planets to understand the solar chart, to understand the basic principles and guiding properties of Sagittarius. But when you add the planets, we add detail to the scenario. And we learn a couple of very, very important things. Now, about your first house, we have talked. These two deep space points here, which I usually circle to show that they're deep space points. Here's another one. I only use three. M87. The first thing going on right now that is of immediate and essential information is that Uranus is moving into your relationship house. So in astrology, you're here and your partners are here. You work with partners there. You hang out with and marry them there. Well, you hang out with them and you plan to get married, and then you get married and merge there. So work, partnership, formalized contractual partnership, and into the eighth is this whole influx of information and of data, of people, and all their themes and issues and their money and their debts and everything like that all enters through the eighth. But what's going on now is in the seventh. And in the seventh is this influence that is generally held to be about shakeups, disruptions, and inventions, and about an altering of the status quo. And Uranus is very quick acting. And Uranus has spent all of the summer, Northern Hemisphere, summer, in Gemini. It's been there maybe for about 8 weeks or so. And this is shaking up your whole existence. And it is likely to compel you to evaluate your relationships and potentially to either make changes or experience changes in them. But in any event, there is going to be an energy that you have to meet head on, which is there's you facing that way. We could draw a little stick figure for you, and you're looking that way. And you're looking at this disruptive influence known as Uranus, usually depicted in green when we're looking at photos from NASA space probes. And I have never seen Uranus through a telescope, but I imagine it would have a slight green tint to it. And so there's a lot of movement and a lot of catching up. Now, Uranus did not just manifest there. It has been in Taurus the past 7 years. It's going to return for a very brief stint into Taurus again, but it's been in Taurus, and Taurus is where everyone seeks their solidity, their stability, their ability to hold some consistency. And this has been very difficult because for the past 7 years, there's been this churning going on in the place where you would tend to hold your stability, and Uranus is not about stability. Uranus is about anything but stability. And that has been challenging because usually Taurus is the place where you will successfully ground, and where you may have found it possible to successfully ground your whole life. And usually that's going to be in work of some kind. That's going to be in service of some kind. And it could be also in physical activity. It could be in a concentration or focus on physical healing. And you want and need, though we all do to some extent, Sagittarius is so expanded and so full of energy that it heavily relies upon the grounding of Taurus to be able to get anything done. And what putting Uranus here for the past 7 years since early 2018 has done is to been to create this like massive overwhelming case of ADHD all of a sudden. And that has not been easy. And it is, while it is almost over, that energy is now going to move above the horizon into a general sense of what the atmosphere is about, what a general sense of the atmosphere of your relationships is about, and a general sense of the world as you look out at it right across the horizon. And by the way, the view from here kind of extends out to about here and out to about, well, out to about the fifth. So you get houses 5, 6, 7, and 8 as your line of sight from the ascendant, and from there you have to take a different approach. And we'll talk about all these places in this thing called the projection zone. So bear that in mind. Now, while you have experienced work-related matters being destabilized, that has come with a radical increase in what I will call creative capacity, creative activity, and risk-taking behavior. And it may be necessary to have a destabilization in the work and wellness house to accommodate all of this rapidly increasing movement in your creative house. This houses 5 and 6 work together. The art studio and the kind of workspace work together. This is sometimes the art studio. This is sometimes the office, or the art studio and the desk in the art studio. That whatever metaphor you can have of a creative space and a business space, that's houses 5 and 6. And so house this the activity. Look at all of this. None of these are asteroids. These are classical planets. Chiron is like the most famous minor planet. Eris, one of the most famous minor planets. And then Borsisi, which I don't talk about a lot, but I put in every chart. And then Salacia, which I've been talking about a lot lately. That is a lot of emphasis in the fifth house. And one of the... Focusing in on the single most significant factor of the fifth right now of Aries. And remember how important Aries is, because Aries is the location where you seek to self-actualize. Aries is the location where you are going to be most naturally inclined to find yourself. Particularly when you're young, that's going to be through some form of creative expression. And it's not creative expression as some kind of an abstraction, when my father says to me, well, you know, you may think we have a lot in common, but you're so much more creative. And for him, maybe creativity is an abstraction. For me, it's an ability to have throughput. For me, it's putting myself into positions where I simply must create, like the one that I'm in now. And so you are very naturally drawn here. And you always have been. But what's gone on here for the past century, since before you were born, is this point called Eris has been moving through this place since 1921. And so this has defined Aries for us. And what that definition is about is... essentially being lulled to sleep by exposure to mass media. We were basically lulled to it seemed like being awake, but we were kind of lulled into a trance by electricity generally, which predates electricity is Eris and Pisces, the whole electrical environment, telegraph, telephone, electric light. When we get into Eris and Aries, we're talking about a whole new kind of a trance put on top of this one, and this is the trance of what became CNN. On, around the clock, everywhere. Pizzeria, airport, bar, sports bar, regular bar, people have it on their phones. And so this particular kind of a mass hypnotic trance begins long before you were born. What is now happening is that Chiron has spent since 2018 in this zone in the chart and is now focusing on an immediate and radical awakening. And this is very challenging. It is not easy, as the old folk song goes, waking up is hard to do. And so we are being called out of this trance all of a sudden, all at once, and seeing that basically the entire world has gone wild under the influence of technology that is so out of control, you have no idea. I thought I understood how out of control it was, and I'm reading Empire of AI by Karen Howe, finding out that basically with all the money they're spending on these AI centers, they could just feed the world. They wouldn't even need to have anybody work. They could just feed the world. All of this massive amount of high-tech wealth is going into data centers that are consuming economies, environments, people, and lives. And we're waking up to this. We're waking up to the fact all artists, 99% of artists, are waking up to the fact that the work that they do can completely be co-opted by some form of a quote-unquote labor-saving device, ChatGPT, and all of its 1,000 different cousins. And so, well, this blows upside down. All of its 1,000 cousins. And what this is doing is it is occupying all of this creative space, in a sense, seizing it, taking it over. And now Chiron is here and is coming into focus, and it is waking you back up to the need to take control of your creative experience. For you, for all of these chitty-chatty things are the most dangerous of anyone, because they threaten to compromise the very thing that makes you you, which is your creative capacity, your self-curiosity. Okay. Along with this, so this is going on, by the way, and this will keep going on well into 2026. This is a dominant theme of 2026 for all of us, for everyone. But remember, for you, this is about finding yourself through your creative expression. Now, there's two planets moving in. They came in, they're going to go out, and Saturn's already out. It'll go back in. So we've got Saturn and Neptune working this line between Pisces and Aries. So they are generally flowing in the direction of Aries, providing a kind of reinforcement. They're providing both inspiration, practical grounding, both those two things, inspiration and practical grounding. This is very important, and in the end will be, as this process develops anyway, be very, very helpful. It may feel in some way burdensome, like you have to take something seriously that previously you had not taken that seriously, but it is essential to the awakening process. As is the shakeup of your Uranus. A lot of people get so lost in their relationships that they can't find themselves. And so what Uranus is going to do is shock you out of that being lost in your relationships, your concept of relationships, till you can't find yourself, and bring you back to yourself. Okay, so this is like, I would call this thing one, but this is thing two, and they're all related. They all integrate into one another. Now, let's consider for a moment the practical challenges of the earth signs. We talked about the challenge of Uranus and Taurus influencing your perception, your experience of some tangible form of stability, very heavily shaken up, very infused with technology, which Uranus does, and has left you changed in some ways and prepared in some ways to be able to experience what we've got going on now. There's two more earth signs to acknowledge. The first one is Capricorn in your second place. The second place is your value system. Your value system is like the most important thing that you have, because it is about how you express your priorities. And with Sagittarius is said and perceived to be extremely forward thinking, and Capricorn is retro. And so it is almost like you proceed with this incredible forward-thinking power in the first house and then wind up in potentially, the 17th century in the second house, whatever Capricorn represents. And one thing that we see going on with Capricorn right now is that this collection of slow movers, and by the way, all the planets depicted in this chart are slow movers. The quickest point is Jupiter. In this reading, I'm leaving out, Mars and my very educated mother. I'm leaving them all out, and we're starting with Jupiter in this reading. These are slow movers. Pholus, 100, under a century, but close to it. Ixion, 250. Quasar, 300. This thing is like 700 years, something like this. All very slow movers. And this is about the extent to which what you experience as your personal priorities are heavily filtered through ancestral priorities. So Sagittarius very often grounds in certain worldly matters like tradition and family tradition, because without that, you feel like you might fly off the planet. And yet the effect can be a little bit much. And in fact, we've had Pluto there since 2008. Finally, Pluto went into Aquarius, giving you some more ability to think independently. But as Pluto left, in the years that Pluto was leaving and going into the third house, this group was collecting and coming into focus out of Aries out of Sag into Cap into the second house, and is filtering you through a very specific form of tradition, which Capricorn always represents, which is something about family line. It's very specifically, it's not generic tradition, family tradition, Thanksgiving. This grouping here, which I'm calling the Family Hunger Games, contains a number of different elements, including two extremely important ancestral elements, Pholus going back three generations, and Quatuar going back to the origins of the tribe. So this is a lot of heavy filtration for you who may want to be creative and be in the moment. It's almost as if you feel like you have to answer to some ancestral authority no matter what you do. Now, I don't know how powerful this illusion is for you, that you're constantly answering to some ancestral authority, but I would be mindful of it and establish a relationship with it. Give these ancestors names. Find out who they are. Sort out who has what priorities. Get a sense of what influenced people. With Pholus, the influence of alcohol becomes very important. I realize this is not an issue in all families. There are some families that are miraculously free from this, but yet they may have other, let's say, multi-generational burdens that form some form of equivalent to alcohol. It could be smoking. It could be religion. It could be an over-obsessive adherence to family lineage. And then so know what they are and go back to your great grandparents and look and check alcohol first. Then with Kwawar, there's some sense of beholden to all that went back to the very beginning of everything, the beginning of the origin story or the beginning of the, let's say, the new line, the family emigrated, usually the emigration story. You know, we moved from Vietnam in 1981. And so, okay, that was... There's your Kwawar, but then there's also the relationship to the ancestors in the homeland. I get that it would be a lot to consider, but I think that just generally considering ancestral influences and the sense of having to answer to ancestral influences. Second house, values, priorities. And the key here is to make sure you're making up your own values and priorities and that you're not being guided or shaped too much or conditioned too much by the ancestors' concept of values. I'm kind of going crazy because I've lost my triangle that I used to draw lines with, and this desk is getting a little shaggy, and I can't even put my hands on a ruler. I don't know how. I'm like, you know, some guys have everything. I'm the guy with like 20 rulers. I can't find a single one. Okay. Let's use something else. Now, here's the connection point to watch. The fifth house, in addition to being a very important creative center, is also a center of sexual reality. Sexual reality has never been more exploited or less in style to talk about in any way, honestly. It is now basically everything and everyone is in some way being pimped. Women's liberation has gone from we want equality and we want pay parity to now we can attend university naked. I mean, I'm all for naked women. I would find it a little bit disturbing to be, sitting in a literature seminar with practically naked women in class. It is not for me to say what is right or wrong for them. But it is for me to say that there are cultural influences that are doing this. There are cultural influences that are saying that this is appropriate, that are making believe that it's appropriate in some way. And what your chart would seem to be calling for is a little more imposition of traditional values upon matters of your sexuality. Which side are you going to err on? Like, what, you know, the Virgin Mary or the Scarlet Whore of Babylon? Like, which direction, if you're a woman, which direction are you going to lean? Men don't seem to have very many options. Men now seem to have partnered and unpartnered. The vast majority of men, ask around and see if this is accurate. The men do not have their sexual options open, and when the sexual options are open, it does not seem to be about what young people today are calling body count. I realize the chances are, if you're watching this, you're over 50 years old. In any event, what I am suggesting here is that normally I would see this group being a negatively, overly overly conditioning factor. I am saying for you that Sagittarius, with all this very powerful emphasis on fire, has to work with Earth as a kind of a cooling system, as a slowing system, as a governing system. And so Salacia, which I haven't said the name till now, is part of this Hunger Games pattern. I indicate the Hunger Games pattern in red, and it's going to include Saturn soon. Is about what's appropriate for you. You have probably figured this out already, that what's appropriate for you leans a little bit toward, a little bit more toward socially conservative. You might have to ask yourself whether you've gone too far in that direction, whether you're allowing yourself to be too heavily governed. Why would this matter? Well, it would matter because the governing system that you put on your sexuality is also the governing system that you put on your creative expression. Highly creative and highly expressive and high achieving people tend to be more sexual. So there really, you really have to do what I will call the Salacia check, which is actively ask yourself what is appropriate sexual expression for you, which really means sexual and relational expression, which really is about everyone's unique, you know, unique orientation. I mean, we're living in times where this thing that thinks itself as the new left, which it's not, it's imagining things, is imposing on much of society this concept of the rainbow flag, where if you happen to be a heterosexual male, you don't get any place on the rainbow flag. So it's rainbow flag all except for one color, and that being heterosexual men. And no one likes to talk about this omission. This omission is not considered funny to bring up. And it's a very, very important sign of our times. But that said, the rainbow flag with the pink and the light blue, this is considered complete anarchy by what falsely consider themselves to be right-wing forces, which accuse the left-wing of being woke, but then the right-wing wants to go back to, like, the two-color rainbow flag, that being, like, red and blue, that there's going to be boys and there's going to be girls and that's going to be it, and, like, gay, well, meh, let's not mention it too much, and bisexual, forget it, we never even heard of that, and trans is non-existent. Okay, what I'm saying is that Salacia's message for you is that you must determine what is right for you. And that while you're determining what is right for you, it's important to recognize that there are these conditioning forces that are and have always been acting upon you. And the question is now, how do you name them? How do you identify them? What do you do with them? What do you do with them? And how do you integrate this into your own personal expression? Do you do everything you can to step out of these bounds? Do you work with them? Or, do you find yourself in some kind of a hypocritical position where you're advocating total freedom for yourself and then tremendous restraint for your partners? Your partners, by the way, are going to have no part of restraint. There's one thing you're not going to be able to do, which is to control, condition, or restrain your partners with this a thing on the seventh house. It's not going to be possible. And so you're going to have to get accustomed to a much higher diversity of influences coming from the outside influencing you. Now, while we're here, and this reading is taking a whole different direction than any of the other readings, the 12th house is what you tend to hide. And for you, the 12th house is Scorpio. And this is a tendency to hide all things Scorpio. That's what the 12th is. The 12th is the 12th is what is concealed, what is outside of normal view. And you may benefit from being more out and open about your sexuality. The Sagittarians that I know, and I've known a few, very important people, always want to make it seem like They've only ever had three partners. Very conservative. No, wait a minute. No, no, not I'm not a floozy. No, me, not me. Polyamorous, me, masturbate. No, not me. No, that's for other people. That's for all those really out there weirdo. Well, that's about having Capricorn on the second. You got to seem more straight-laced than you actually are. And it's also about making sure that your actual sexual impulses of Scorpio are veiled away in the 12th house. But they come out in interesting places and times, like under any substance, like your dreams, like when you can maintain secrecy. When you can maintain secrecy, you kind of feel like you can do anything you want. But the problem is, not only is there no privacy, we're in a time when there is no secrecy. You could probably look up everybody's social security number somewhere on the internet if you have, $20. So let's talk about what's going on for you in the 8th. Yeah, it's already in there. Good. Put it, get out my big green marker. And that would be Jupiter in the 8th. So what your ruling planet Jupiter in the 8th in Cancer is saying is, if you're more at home with your sexuality, you will feel better. The 8th is another very important house of sexual expression. The big houses, and somewhere I've got a presentation on this, of sexual expression are 5, play, exploration. We've got a lot going on there. So it's the creative sexual fusion. 8th is the commitment sexual fusion. Depth, deep connecting, emotional connecting with Cancer there, as well as financial connecting. It's the 8th. And so I have a working theory, which is when you have sex with someone and you have shared finances, you're married. This is the definition of marriage in the state of Colorado. If you live together and share a bank account, you are married, and you can be considered married by the courts. You don't need to go get Elvis marry you in Las Vegas. And so I would suggest that if you don't really want to be married, have separate bank accounts. But the point is, where there's money and there's sex, there is basically marriage. And Jupiter is raising this question, and it's inviting you to be at home in this aspect of your life. But being at home there means doing a lot of the kinds of sharing that the fire signs don't really let you do. The fire signs really have a very strong tendency to make it all about you. This comes with real challenges. It comes with mainly with the challenge of sharing your experience with someone, because if it's all about you, it can't really be all about somebody else or half about somebody else if you're going to keep coming back to you and who you are and what you are. And so this placement of Jupiter 8th is saying, get an exchange going. And Uranus is likely to disrupt anything where there is not an exchange going. Uranus wants to get that Gemini factor of an exchange going. And the 5th here is saying that you have all kinds of options open, but the main necessity of the 5th with Chiron conjunct Eris is to stay awake to your own creative and sexual power. Stay awake to your own curiosity. Stay awake to your process of becoming who you are through direct creative expression, experimentation, very important element of the 5th, curiosity, very important element of the 5th, and the experimentation, curiosity things are often the things that are the first that are soaked or bleached or beaten out of children to make children more manageable. And so if you're feeling guilt, you know that you're running into somebody else's management plan. I'll repeat that again. If you are feeling guilt, you should know that you are running into someone else's management plan for you. The guilt was the place that they placed the barrier. The guilt was the place they placed the barricade, the barbed wire. And so when you get to that point, that's the point at which to keep going, to keep the experiment going, to remain curious, to remain inquisitive, and to keep asking yourself, who am I and what am I doing here? And when, and if the answer to the who am I and what am I doing here question comes in the form of, I've got to do this, then you don't need words. You just do it and you see what happens on the other side of that. All right, plenty else to talk about. The next reading up will be the 2026 annual edition. They'll probably have a birthday reading for Sagittarius. So we'll see how that goes. I'm feeling a little bit stretched on the number of readings I'm doing and the amount of material that there is to cover. As you can see, there's not a shortage, but there's only so much that you can actually process, right? And I think we're close to that limit. You may want to play this a couple of other times, and you may want to play it without looking at the screen. The Death card, total transformation and information in the form of, and what else we got here going on? A mystery. Okay, so obviously big changes and a big mystery on the horizon. Look for the older guy with gray hair who's not me, in the form of the King of Swords, possibly some form of a traditional profession, and just signing off here. This card is a Taurus card, but I associate this with Sagittarius also, the Hierophant, which is about making sure that you are always asking the right questions, that you make sure you've got a consistent, steady stream of questions going at all times. All right, signing off from Harshaw House on the 2nd September, and signing off at about 12:44 p.m. Please tell your dog, your cat, of course, your goat, your donkey, but I send my love. Bye.